Great to have you along on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Well, there were some new dietary guidelines for Americans released recently. And for the first time, some new things included information for pregnant and breastfeeding women and for children under two, just to name a couple. And a couple of people, or one person to talk with us about it. Beth Olson is back with us. Beth's an associate professor and extension specialist in the nutritional sciences department at UW-Madison. Her main focus is on nutrition education and also on healthy infant feeding. So we'll go over those dietary guidelines with her and certainly answer your questions as well relating to the guidelines or maybe nutrition in general. Are you concerned about your eating habits? Would certainly love to hear from you. Join in. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. And Beth Olson, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Well, it's good to be here, if not in person, at least by voice.
At least by voice, exactly. We have those new dietary guidelines. They came out actually in December. And I'm trying to remember, you know, I've been doing this show a long time, and I can remember many a time going back with Sue Nitzky and now with you. The guidelines change. How often do they change, and why do they change?
Well, right now they change or are revised and updated every 5 years, actually, by law. The U.S. government requires that they are updated every 5 years. So the committee is assembled in the year that they're being revised. It's a scientific group. And what they are instructed to do is look at the previous dietary guidelines, look at what's changed in the last 5 years, and then update our guidelines to be current. And the reason they do this is those guidelines underlie all kinds of programs that federal governments have, state governments have, even our local county agencies, and help inform them, make them as their meal programs, their advice as healthy as it can be.
Yeah, and so it does have some impact on school lunch programs, for example.
Exactly. School lunch programs, breakfast programs. We have services that help feed seniors who need help. It helps inform those as well. So, and, you know, even our physicians or others that are giving us dietary advice look to the dietary guidelines to help us eat healthy.
Well, that makes good sense. You know, the guidelines, there's a guidelines title, I think it's Make Every Bite Count.
Yes, that's their slogan, I guess you would say. And I think the guidelines themselves do change, but they don't change tremendously. We've been saying for years, eat some fruits and vegetables, eat some whole grains, get your fiber. But I think over the years, the Dietary Guidelines Committee, as well as the agencies that eventually create materials for consumers, have looked at how do we, though, frame those messages, because the scientific committee this time pointed out, unfortunately, we haven't made a lot of improvements to our diets in recent years, and, you know, it's showing a little bit in our health. So how do we frame it? What are the messages we put out? So the Make Every Bite Count was really saying, you know, we don't have as much room as sometimes we think we do to indulge. We certainly have room. We should enjoy, you know, what we like to eat. But the majority of our calories really should be coming from the healthiest of the foods in order for us to be healthy.
You know, for the show, I just finished talking with Cindy Kurash. One of the factors or one of the items that we discovered was that a majority of respondents to an American Psychological Association study reported gaining an average of 29 pounds this last year.
Oh, gracious, I haven't seen that. That's a fair bit, and that, you know, that's going to take some, that will probably take some conscious effort for for people to get off that amount of weight. Of course, not everybody did. You know, the other thing I've seen is the opposite side, which is for many people, eating can be quite social, just like Cindy was talking about exercise being social. So some seniors who used to go to the senior center for lunch every day and eat with the people there or have their friends together to eat were suddenly eating alone. I think the Meals on Wheels services taking meals out to seniors increased because those people couldn't get out. And so some of them reported losing weight because they just didn't enjoy eating by themselves every day.
But they're, again, making every bite count. What are they eating every day?
Yes,
when you're alone.
Yeah, and if you can't get out and shop much. You know, that was a big discussion in the beginning of the pandemic. A little less so now because people are getting out more and also, you know, our stores kind of caught up. But early on, people went out and bought, you know, lots of canned and frozen goods. They were really worried they wouldn't have enough food or if they got sick, you know, that they couldn't be out. And that changed some people's eating patterns as well as, you know, some people who used to go out and work during the day in an office and now were at home with 24/7 access to their refrigerator found that they maybe were snacking more than they should have been.
Yeah. Carrie in Appleton, let's give you a chance to join in. Hi, Carrie. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. I have just a quick question. I try to eat so healthy, and I'm real careful about what I eat. But one of the things that really bothers me is seeing some of our most frail population, the people in the hospitals and nursing homes who are being fed Ensure and these other dietary supplement food under the guise of food. Anything being done about that with those bad sugars and bad oils and calling it food?
Yeah, I don't work with nursing homes, so that would be a good question probably for the dietitians that do. But I would say most, you know, good nursing homes and hospitals do have a dietitian supervising the meal plans. So where people can eat whole food, that's the preferred set of food. They may have other modifications, you know, if they have diabetes or hypertension. But we do have some seniors who are smaller. They're losing their appetite. You know, we can lose a little bit of smell, which relates then to our taste as we get older. And again, you know, maybe being in the hospital or being in the nursing home and alone, just not eating enough calories to get the nutrients they need. And so that's when often something like Ensure would be added as a supplement if they can. You know, if they can chew at all, they certainly provide them with food. As it happens, I just was at a dinner with my mother. I know Cindy mentioned her mother as well in her assisted living facility. And it was really quite a variety of what people were eating based on their needs. So my mom, you know, is still eating mostly whole foods, but another woman needed soup and she had Ensure and, you know, a softer dessert. She clearly was having more trouble chewing and getting down a lot of food. So that's where we really need it. Where we don't want to use it is for people who could be eating whole foods to use that as a supplement.
Yeah, good points. Carrie, thanks a lot for calling. I'm glad you called with that. It gave Cindy or Beth a chance to address that area. Appreciate it very much. Well, Beth, you tend to work on the other end of the age spectrum, maybe the middle and the lower end.
Yes.
let's go to the low end for a minute. Why were infants and young children not included before in the dietary guidelines?
Well, I think that it's such a tricky age. You know, they're growing so quickly, they're developing, so their needs are so different. So it's harder to say, like we do with adults, we can come up with, you eat this many calories, you know, here's the food groups we need, the nutrients we need, have this many cups of fruit, this many of vegetables. It's harder, though, because babies are so different. You know, they can be born healthy with perhaps a 50% difference in weight between them, and they can grow completely differently. So it's hard to kind of come up with that. The other reason is it's hard to get data. I remember my children when they were little, and if you asked me day to day what they eat, I didn't know. and so it's really hard to even get good data on, you know, what they eat. But the government felt like it was important Again, because, you know, there are children in childcare, people at home, you know, hearing from their doctors about what to feed their children, that they be included, this youngest among us, in with the entire family in getting dietary advice. And one thing the dietary guidelines, both the committee and then the scientific group who provides the report, but then the government uses the report to write the actual dietary guidelines, what both groups talked about was it is important for us to try to have the healthiest diets we can from the beginning. So pregnancy, you know, in a way is the beginning. And
right.
Then from birth on, that establishing those good patterns early on will just make it so much easier to maintain them as time goes on. But if you start, you know, at the youngest age, providing them with a lot of sweets and treats and giving them things to encourage them to eat, you know, eat this on your dinner and then you can have a cookie or that kind of thing, we're going to start setting up patterns that now we, you know, some of us have spent a lifetime trying to overcome.
Oh boy. So what are we telling parents to be feeding their infants and young children?
Yes, and of course, you know, Larry, this is an area I love because I work in the area of feeding babies. I would say a lot of the information in the guidelines for the youngest isn't new information. They took information that we have had coming out from the American Academy of Pediatrics and other groups like that and put it together. And so the basic kind of recommendation was, you know, when they're very young, till about 6 months old, they should have breast milk if they can, if not formula. And then you start introducing solid foods. And that they included some of the kind of the newest recommendations we have out, which is they should really start with kind of a wide variety of foods that their family eats, you know, modified for them. It might be, you know, jarred baby food, or we might mash something up. But we used to start them out on all these foods that we thought would reduce their risk of getting allergies, and then we'd withhold all those foods we thought might cause allergies till they were older. And we've now found out that really probably only increases their allergy risk. When the baby's developing in that first year is when their body should be exposed to things, because then their body learns these are safe. You know, for most babies, peanut butter is safe. Strawberries are safe. Nuts are safe. So that was a big one. I thought the other really big recommendation they...
Well, hold off on that one, okay. Because we'll put that as a tease for when we get back. Beth Olson, our guest, she's going to have a whole lot more information, as you well know, right after this look at the news. And we'll find out what else is in store for us on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mehler. Larry Mehler here on the Ideas Network. Glad to have you along today. We're talking about the latest dietary guidelines for Americans and how to make healthier food choices. And our guest is Beth Olson. She's an associate professor and extension specialist in the Nutritional Sciences Department at UW-Madison. So what would you like to know about eating better? What about the guidelines? What's stopping you from changing your diet? Join in. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or shoot us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Beth, before we go to the phones, I want to go back to my comment. You were talking about infants and young children and the guidelines and so forth. So continue on, please.
Yeah, I think one of the important thing they noted about infants, and this is actually related to the earlier caller, you know, where we have older adults who might not be eating that many calories. Infants are just growing and developing. I mean, they're forming all their organs, their brain, but they are pretty small, so they don't have a lot of calories. So they pointed out they have so little room for extra calories. So they actually said under 2, they should have no added sugar, and they really discourage juice use because the juice has a lot of sugar, but not as many other nutrients necessarily. So that in that every bite counts, they were saying, you know, we really got to pay attention to our littlest people who are developing and just don't have room for extra calories that don't have a lot of nutrients in them.
Makes good sense. Chris and Adams, we'll go to you now. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. If you are older than 60 years old, you get a box of food from the U.S. Department of Agriculture every month, and there is virtually nothing healthy in this box, absolutely nothing. And I stopped getting it just because it was stacking stuff up in my kitchen that I wasn't going to use. And I called Ron Kind's office because he used to sit on the Ag Committee, and I tried to have him take a look at it, and nothing. So I'm wondering if maybe these new guidelines are going to change things so that they take all the sugar out of those boxes and that they put in some healthy grains and some good stuff for people.
Yes, I certainly would hope so. I'm not familiar right now with what is put in the food boxes. I know that there were, you know, quite a lot of food boxes that came out during COVID too, in addition to, you know, what we typically provide, and a lot of those were distributed from food pantries. So the dietary guidelines are to inform all of the programs, but often the programs themselves have their own guidelines or their own rules about what's provided, and those rules have to then be changed. So it's sometimes a long process on getting the newer guidelines into things like the school food feeding program. You might remember years ago, Michelle Obama really was promoting that we needed to make those school lunch programs line up with the dietary guidelines. And indeed, there was a lot of regulation put in place to provide kids with, for instance, more whole grains, as the caller was mentioning.
Yeah, that's good points. Chris, thank you so much for calling. Let's go to Brian in Cumberland next. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Larry. How are you doing?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Good. So here's my question. There are countries across the globe, including all of Europe, that have established guidelines for EPA and DHA, some very important fatty acids, and there are no guidelines in the U.S. that I know of, as I understand it. Is there a plan to address this that you know of?
Yeah,
EPA
great.
EPA and DHA.
Yeah, so those are fatty acids. We can make a little bit of those in our body, but generally we need more than we can make, and the main place that we would get those from is seafood. So when the Dietary Guidelines Committee, the scientific committee, put together their report, one of the things they looked at is how much of the various food groups should people be eating to be healthy, and then what do they eat? And one of the big discrepancies came in the seafood category. So it's put in as a protein food, but they note that it isn't just important we get enough protein. We tend to eat a lot of chicken and beef and get protein from there, but that we'd eat other protein foods, one of those being seafood. And one of the reasons is for those long-chain fatty acids, the EPA and DHA, not just for the general population of adults, but for children and for pregnant women, because those are really important fatty acids for brain development. I think the reason that they don't talk about the amount specifically of the fatty acids is the research on giving those individual fatty acids isn't as strong. So it isn't as strong to say if you take a supplement of fish oil, you'll have all these benefits. The evidence for overall health, which is what the Dietary Guidelines is concerned with, is best for seafood. So there is in the Dietary Guidelines a good section in their booklet, if you look online, or their pamphlet. It's a long booklet. A good section on good seafood choices for families, including when you're giving it to the littlest, making sure you look at FDA and EPA have guidelines. Make sure you look at those and pick the safest fish, the ones that are least likely to have any environmental contaminants in them.
Oh, good points. Brian, thank you. Tom in Milwaukee, we'll turn to you now. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I haven't looked at the dietary guidelines for probably a couple of decades, but my recollection was that there used to be a great emphasis on things like dairy and meat, and that seemed to be out of deference to the lobbying effects of the dairy industry and the cattle industry. I'm wondering, with the current recommendations, do you see pressure from varying business groups that have altered what would really be healthy for the recommendations?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the guidelines have changed from a couple of decades ago. In that, there is more recognition of variety within food groups. So the meat, you know, was really a part of getting enough protein. And especially when we really thought that higher quality animal proteins were an easier way to get the protein we need. Now we know that if we eat a variety of proteins, we get the amino acids, which are the subunits within, that we need. And so now there's a lot more emphasis on variety in every food group. So we still have a protein group, but they note we get enough chicken and beef overall. What we don't get enough is protein from plants. That'd be things like lentils and beans. We don't get enough from seafood. And then in the dairy group, I think the wording has changed over the years to acknowledge that some people don't consume dairy. They can't or they choose not to. What's important is some of the nutrients in the dairy and where would you get those from. So talking about using, for instance, fortified soy products or what vegetables have calcium in them that's available to us. So yes, I think there's really been a recognition that we need to have a wide variety, including plant foods with our animal foods.
Yeah. Good questions, Tom. Thank you so much. You can join in too, by the way, question or comment, maybe an experience. Give a call at 800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Stella next in Sturgeon Bay. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. You perhaps partially answered my question, but for years, for the last 52 years, I have been a vegetarian. I do eat dairy, some dairy products, and I do eat very occasionally eggs. So I am a lacto-ovo, sometimes ovo, vegetarian. I don't eat anything that would try to escape from me if I went to catch it. And there are vegetarians who are lacto-vegetarians, but they don't eat any eggs, and there are vegans. And I have always found the dietary guidelines to be useless because they depend on meat and seafood for protein. They do not. I have dietary guidelines now been developed for vegetarians, and not just vegans, but lacto-ovo vegetarians as well.
Yeah, great question. One of the things that the dietary guidelines, again, has evolved over the years to do is to not just talk about nutrients in foods. The early guidelines, you know, talked about dairy and fruits and vegetables. And for many reasons, but a couple of important ones, they moved away from that to saying, you know, here are the food groups you need to eat, but here's the way to put them into a meal pattern that suits you. One reason is the best evidence for health comes from dietary patterns, not from individual foods or individual nutrients. When we supplement with one food or one nutrient in a study, we tend not to get the good results we hope for because it's really the package of nutrients that's important. And so one of those has been in the protein group. They now have in their protein meal patterns that they show, and these are kind of in the sometimes mixed in the guidelines, but at the back there's appendices, and they give you examples. So they have your fruit, your vegetable, your protein, your dairy, all of it. But then they give that pattern for a typical U.S. diet, which does include animal products. But then they give it for a vegetarian pattern, and they also give it for the Mediterranean diet. They also refer to the DASH diet, which has a significantly less red meat in it. So what they're trying to show is just an example of how you can customize to meet the needs in your group. And certainly there's been a, you know, just much more emphasis on the importance of plant foods in the latest versions of the dietary guidelines in context of the overall diet.
And just while I'm at it, how does Stella or anybody else for that matter get a hold of a copy of the dietary guidelines?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if they are mailing out copies yet. They, you can go to the dietaryguidelines.gov. That's the www.dietaryguidelines.gov, and you can download a PDF of it. If you can get a single copy, which is usually over time, they will let you mail in to get one copy. You know, in the old days, we'd mail in and get, you know, many, many, because, and we'd hand them out because that was, we didn't have the internet. You know, you remember, Larry?
Oh, yes.
But now, you know, it's more ecological to have people, if they can, look at it online. So dietaryguidelines.gov. And there, too, there's all kinds of links. There's links to all kinds of extension, like we are here at UW, UW Extension, but other government sites with materials for consumers, tips you can look up if you're older, if you're pregnant, you know, recipes, communication materials, games for kids. I mean, that's also different from years ago. You know, we kind of got the dietary guideline brochure and we were done with it. But now they put them into just many, many communication materials that we can use in schools, doctor's offices, with our kids, for ourselves.
So lots of good information in it. You may not be able to get a copy of it, a paper copy, but you can certainly get one online. And where again is, what's the online address?
It's dietaryguidelines.gov.
Dietaryguidelines.gov. I wonder if we've got that posted. I bet Jill Nadeau's probably got that posted up on our...
I bet she does.
I bet she does on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. She sent me, Jill sent me something, a top 10 things you need to know about the dietary guidelines for Americans for 2020 to 2025. There are four overarching guidelines.
Yes. So those are kind of their big categories. So we already talked, you know, actually a fair bit about these, that you want to, it says follow a healthy diet, the first, a dietary pattern at every life stage. That's your, you know, at any stage in life, you can improve your diet, keep a healthy diet, but it's really important if we can start early and then, you know, just continue throughout our life. The second one is about customizing it. So to the caller's question about does it work for vegetarians? So customize it for how you like to eat, for your cultural preferences. There are people who eat, you know, certain kinds of foods that are different than another culture, and you want to look at how do I make those fit in. The third one is about focusing on nutrient-dense foods. Again, we talked about that. It's just saying in their estimation for an average American adult, we need about 85% of our calories to come from really our healthiest nutrient-dense foods. We have about 15% left for added sugars, saturated fats, which aren't very good for us, and alcohol. So we just don't have a lot of calories to eat foods which don't carry other nutrients. And then the last one is goes again to this point. It says limit foods and beverages high in added sugar, saturated fat, and alcohol. So, you know, you need, just need to be careful, because if you get past 15%, you start to either add on calories that might help lead to weight gain, or you're going to displace something else that you really do need.
Yeah. You know, I would bet that most Americans don't follow the dietary guidelines. And so how do we change that, or how to?
Yeah, you know, I think I was actually on another show with Cindy, your previous guest, and I really like her way of looking at exercise is how I look at nutrition, which is, you know, if what you try to do is do too much or make it a burden or things you don't like, you're probably not going to do it. So we often, if we're working with people, for instance, Extension does group education on nutrition, you know, kind of say, where are you now? And then what are some simple, easy steps you could do, maybe just one at a time? So take this week and say, you know, I look here and I don't eat that many vegetables. Okay, each day for lunch, could I try to bring, you know, a fresh, crunchy vegetable, the baby carrots or something else, and have that instead of my crackers or my chips? Or every day I have this snack in the afternoon of cookies. Maybe this afternoon I'll have, you know, a small amount of mixed nuts. So I think it's trying to make those changes one by one, simpler ones. Maybe you tweak something. So you have a food that's not as healthy for you. Maybe you don't get rid of it. Maybe there's a way to make it healthier. You broil the chicken instead of deep frying, you know, something like that. And then and see which ones can, you know, really suit you well.
Kind of about, and I think one of the 10 points was kind of about the pattern of eating. And, you know, we do fall into patterns. There are things, you know, I always eat for lunch. I have fruits, typically.
Uh-huh.
So I'll have an apple. I'll have a low-sodium can of V8. I will have maybe a cutie. And possibly some grapes.
Yeah, great. Yeah, I think what they're when they talk about the pattern over time, they're saying, you know, just because you went to the movie and got some buttered popcorn, or you went to a birthday party and had a piece of cake, that's not what they're talking about. That's, you know, those are, you know, things you do now and then. What they're worried about is, if you are, say you work outside and you don't bring a lunch, and every day you go down to the downtown in the town and go to McDonald's, and then you're coming home from work and you pick up, you know, a Taco Bell. I don't want to pick on particular establishments, but fast food. If that's what you're doing every day, then your diet is probably not serving you as well as you would like. So that's what they're talking about. What are the kind of things that we do that aren't as healthy over time that we could make healthy over time so that those indulgences, you know, are okay because they're not every day or every meal?
I think the other thing, and maybe maybe this has been better in a way. I know we gained a lot of people gained a lot of weight during COVID times, but portion sizes. And I don't think we pay a lot of attention, especially when we're out to eat. We don't necessarily pay attention to portion sizes.
Yes, and that's so hard because a lot of foods are presented to us in bigger portion sizes. So after a while, they start to look normal. So it's something that you can work on over time, but probably in the beginning, it has to be pretty deliberate. So I often give an example of, you know, I was traveling through an airport in the pre-COVID days a while back, and I didn't bring, you know, something for a snack, you know, before I got on my plane. So I thought, well, I'm going to go get this trail mix. And this, you know, this will be healthier than the candy bar. So I sat down and I ate it all. And then I turned over and it, you know, it was like two or three portion sizes and, you know, like 600 calories or something, you know, the size of my dinner or something. You know, so I just wasn't, you know, it looked healthy and it looked like it was in one package, looked like I should eat it all. So it's the kind of thing that on packaged foods you can look. Also, if you, you know, even if I often eat a snack of nuts in the afternoon and I can look on the back and see, you know, how many calories and saturated fat and other things, good fats, are in a serving. And what does a serving look like? And sometimes, you know, if you just measure out, if it says a quarter cup and you measure it out and you put it in a bowl, you might think, oh, usually when I do this, it's about three times this big. So it's just a way of kind of starting to realize what's the amount that I need and should be eating.
Yeah. And when you think about, somebody told me once, well, how far do you have to walk just to eat off, to work off one M&M? And they said, you start at the end zone of a football field and you walk all the way down to the end zone of the other football field of the football field. And now you've burned the calories from an M&M.
Yeah, that's, and you know, I think what's so hard about that, and I, you know, Cindy may have touched up upon it, is if we can be active, we can burn more calories, but it doesn't give you the excuse to do whatever you want. So if you think, and as you're pouring the M&Ms out, you know, I could eat that M&M in 5-10 seconds, and how long is it going to take me to walk, and do I have all that time, and do I want to do it? So they kind of go hand in hand, and you know, frankly, one of the reasons I do exercise, or and I'm a very social exerciser, I like to do it with people, is it does give me a few more calories in my day where I can get healthy foods, but I can also, you know, get a little indulgence in.
And a little indulgence can be a good thing. Beth Olson, thank you so much for being with us today. Really appreciate it. We'll look forward to your next visit. Thanks, Beth.
Okay, thank you. Have a good day, Larry.
Beth Olson is Associate Professor and Extension Specialist in the Nutritional Sciences Department at UW-Madison, our guest. Tomorrow, we're going to talk to a worm expert, find out the latest on jumping worms, and then at 11:45, we'll talk about connecting women to conservation efforts. In the meantime, hey, stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.